Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
We saw some NBA history at the United Center Monday night. Klay Thompson exploding for 14 three-pointers, breaking the record that was previously held by his teammate Steph Curry of 13. This is the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. I'm Mark Schanosky, joined by my pre- and post-game partners Kendall Gill and Will Perdue. All right, so KG, you still own the record for steals in a game, yeah. But the three-point record has moved on to a different warrior.
Yeah, it has. Steph Curry had it at 13, but I was quite pleased with the way Steph was trying to beat his own record and get it for his teammate, Klay Thompson. I'm not sure, Will, I would do that.
See, there's some honesty right there.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would do that.
Here's the thing. You made a valid point. Steph knows that he'll have the opportunity to break that
many more times down
the road, because it was, what, their eighth game?
Yeah.
So, I mean, they still got 74 to go. He'll have that opportunity. But, the interesting thing is, as we talked about during the postgame show, is I was in the hallway as they were exiting the locker room, heading back out for the third quarter, and a bunch of players were standing around a computer screen with one of their SID guys that travels, and they were kind of mumbling, and all of a sudden, as Steph Curry walked by with a stat sheet in his hand, he said, "Let's get him 14. Mm-hmm. So then I went over to the SID, and I said, "What are they talking about, 14? And then we thought maybe, I think because he had 36 at half, is that right, that he only needed 14 points to reach 50? But actually it was he had 10 threes at half. Mm-hmm. They wanted him to get four more threes so he could break the record.
Right.
And I wasn't even aware it was Steph's record. And then their SID looked up at me and said, "Oh, by the way, that's Steph's record of 13 that they're trying to break with 14, which he got."
And if you're wondering what Will's talking about, he's thinking about college. It's sports information directors in college. It's media relations.
Media relations.
Media relations.
I don't want you to fool anybody thinking it's some kind of disease outbreak here at the United Center. We talked about this on the postgame show on NBC Sports Chicago. And remember, we do pre- and postgame for all 82 games, whether it's on WGN, whether it's on a network or not. You can find us all here for postgame live and pregame live for those all 82 Bulls games. I want to ask you about Steve Kerr's decision to leave Klay in. He took 10 three-pointers in the third quarter before he finally got the record. And to me, I don't know, that kind of makes a mockery of what's going on out there, because they were up by 42 at halftime. It's okay maybe to go with your starters to begin the half, but I thought they went a little too far to try to get that record.
Yeah, but, it's good to be the king. And when you're king, you can pretty much do whatever you want to do. And the Golden State Warriors, they were close. I think that the fans knew that he was going for the record. So, also, he wanted to say, "Listen, I'm going to give you the third quarter." Now, if he had played past the third quarter, then I could see.
But he got hurt. He banged heads. He had a gash on his forehead. He looked like Bozo the Clown wearing that headband out there.
But you know what? It was probably Steph egging him on.
Yeah, it's probably true.
To say, Steve, leave him in the game. Let him go for it.
But listen, at the end of the day, when Kendall and I played, this would have been an issue.
Yeah.
But the league has changed. It's not an issue. I think when you heard Zach LaVine's post-game interview, he said, "Yeah, no big deal."
Right.
It's a big deal. But I also think because of what it is that the Golden State Warriors are trying to accomplish, what it is that Steve Kerr is trying to accomplish as far as trying to keep these guys engaged for 82 games, I think Steve's even going outside of his comfort zone as far as what he's allowing these players to do. And then in his post-game press conference, he realized after the third quarter had started what was going on, because guys were actually on the bench counting down. He's like, "What are they talking about?"
Yeah,
right.
And they said, "Well, he's attempting to break Steph's record of 13 threes in a game." And I can promise you that deep down, it didn't sit well with him, because he was, every time he touched it, he was jacking it. Like you said, every shot was a three. Now, that being said, you noticed right before he hit the game winner, because he had missed a couple, remember he put the ball on the deck and hit like that running one-hander to kind of see the ball go through the net.
Right.
But also, at the end of the day, because I think the league has changed and what Steve saw that meant to the team and how engaged they were in a blowout, watching him try to score that, get that 14th bucket, and when he hit it, the bench exploded.
They did.
And I think he realized that that was important to the camaraderie of this team. Mm-hmm. That was one way to keep these guys engaged in a 40-plus point blowout.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're going to end up seeing a lot of that this year as far as how good this team is, mm-hmm. the things that they can actually accomplish. And at some point, I would imagine their media relations staff is going to start keeping a stat as far as, you know, how many 20-point blowouts, how many points did they have at the end of the third quarter?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just remember looking up and they had 113 points and there was still 4.5 minutes left in the third quarter.
Yeah,
and I was like,
that's a lot of points.
Man, this is an explosive offense like I've never seen.
Well, it's interesting, too. You mentioned in the postgame show that Steve Kerr was kind of playing the absent-minded professor routine. Like, I don't know what's going on. The guys wanted to do this. He was the guy who started Jordan Bell in the only visit by the Golden State Warriors last year to kind of pimp the Bulls for selling that second-round draft pick. Then, of course, Bell got hurt in the first quarter, didn't play much.
But I guarantee you that one of the players, because of the relationship that Steve has with the players, went to him and said, hey, we would like you to start Jordan Bell. And he probably said, okay, if that's what you guys want, this is what we'll do. Because remember last year even – he was handing the clipboard to guys during timeouts and allowing them the freedom to draw plays while him and the coaching staff stood in their huddle away from the players' huddle.
Phil wouldn't have done that, would he?
Oh, if Phil's not relinquishing that control, no way. No way.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it was interesting hearing some of the comments from the young Bulls players, Zach LaVine, talking about how great this team is, almost in awe. And, you know, as a competitor, you hate to see conceding that much. Yes, the Golden State Warriors are two-time defending champions. They probably should have won four in a row. But still, you know, as a competitor, you hate to see them saying, well, we had really had no chance against these guys.
Yeah, and even though that's a fact.
Right,
it's a fact. Even though it's a fact, you still want your players to believe that they can win the game. And even if they get beat, you don't want them, as you said, to concede the victory to them. And, you know, we made the comment on the postgame show, the Leo DeRocher comment, you know, listen, nice guys finish last. And, and that's the mentality that the Bulls have to start having if they're going to be ultra successful. You know?
So Fred Hoiberg was angry after the game. You know, so we got our butts kicked. We've heard that before. But what can he and his coaching staff do to try to improve the intensity and defensive effort of this group when they're so shorthanded the way they are?
I think that's up to the players, quite honestly. You know, you and I joked that I mentioned that one of your favorite words is curt.
Right.
Because you said as we came out of the Fred Hoiberg sound, well, Fred was curt tonight. And you're like, that's not one of my favorite words. And I said, well, unfortunately, you've had to use that more than once already this year. And we're only in, what, game eight?
Game seven.
Yeah, so I think that the frustration he is showing is hearing players talking about, well, you know, the game plan was solid. But yet Jabari Parker talking about how Charlotte in their second game of the home and home
didn't have a scheme.
They didn't have a scheme to change what they were doing, the two-man drag.
Right.
Whether that was a shot at the coaches or not is to be determined. But at the end of the day, that tells you that either the players aren't paying attention or the game plan isn't, you know, as solid as the players are saying.
But they got to hold it together until they get the reinforcements.
Yeah.
It's not like these guys are out for the year.
Right.
You know, we'll see Lauri Markkanen hopefully by Thanksgiving. You see Bobby Portis and Chris Dunn hopefully by December 1st. You're going to have two-thirds of the season left. You don't want to be so far buried in the standings that it's
absolutely
difficult to keep that motivation.
And you hate to, you know, use this word so early in the season, but that's where, you know, pride comes in.
Right.
And one of the things is Kendall talked about, you know, at the beginning of this podcast is that, you know, at some point you just let your play talk, meaning you just go out there and lay it all on the line. And if you lose, at least as aggravated and frustrated as you are when you walk out of that locker room, you can be like, you know what? I laid it on the line tonight. I tried my best. Unfortunately, that wasn't good enough against a better team. But you also don't kind of give that perception. Now, again, perception is a dangerous word, but the perception was after listening to the locker room sound that, they, as you mentioned, it's almost like this team was in awe of what Golden State was doing.
Right.
But at some point, what do you do as far as like, okay, I'm going to do something to prevent this from happening? I mean, they're too good to prevent it from happening as a whole, but, you know, we talked about on defense, how many layups did Steph Curry have tonight? How many backdoor cuts? There was no weak side help. There was, I mean, it was just almost like, as Mark mentioned, they conceded the fact that they were going to get beat, and it didn't look like this, quite honestly. And I know this is like comparing apples and oranges, but just from the effort standpoint, this didn't look like the same team that we saw scrap out a win against Atlanta. And then people were like, oh, that's Atlanta. It doesn't matter. A win is a win in this league. Mm-hmm. And you have to exert the effort in order to win, regardless of, you know, your opponent. And we didn't see – I didn't see the scrappiness. I didn't see the effort. And that's unfortunate. Now, the great thing about this league, they have a chance to redeem themselves against a very similar basketball team in the Denver Nuggets on Wednesday.
Similar – half similar.
Nobody has shooters like right. Golden State does. Denver's a great offensive team, but I'll tell you what, Golden State, it's unfortunate. We all love NBA basketball, but when you look at the landscape, we like Boston a little bit in the East, but Houston is kind of taking a step back. I don't see anybody that can challenge Golden State.
I don't see anybody that can challenge them either. And you know, one of the things the Bulls have to protect themselves from is not becoming a prisoner to the Mike Tyson effect. And what I call the Mike Tyson effect is he's already got you beat psychologically before he even gets to the arena.
Oh.
And that's what I thought that the Bulls, that's what happened tonight. Because, it's the Golden State Warriors, the two-time, well, the three-time NBA champions. You have to come at them just like any other opponent. You know, and make them respect you right off the bat, you know, because if you don't make it hard for them, this is what will happen to you, exactly what happened tonight. And the same thing with the Denver Nuggets. You know, you can't be afraid of those guys and concede anything to them before you even get to the arena.
Your Bulls, your way, anywhere, anytime. Download the My Teams app by NBC Sports. Stream games and get the best Bulls coverage in Chicago at your fingertips. Download the My Teams app today.
And that's where, remember, it really bugs me that we're having these same discussions that we had last year about, okay, so then that begs the question, who is the leader of this team? Who steps up and says, all right, guys, listen, what happened at Golden State has happened. It's behind us. But our culture, our effort, our outlook, our approach, it all has to change. And it starts here with Denver. Let's put our record behind us. And, you know, coach speak, let's take it one game at a time. And at least send a message to our fans that, hey, the one thing I can guarantee you is we're going to get the effort regardless of the end result. Because what also bothered me was all the talk that was going on Twitter as far as, like, you know, hopeless, helpless, embarrassing, things like that. And I had to chuckle because KC Johnson comes running in the media room and he grabs it and he takes off. And I said, you leaving already? And he goes, no, I had to come in and get my charge cord.
Right.
With all the records that are being broken, I'm tweeting so much my phone battery's going dead.
He did say.
Yeah, the highlight of the evening was the video tribute to Joakim Noah, who was in the owner's suite tonight watching, unfortunately, a bad game for the home team. And let's talk about Joe a little bit. Here's a guy that worked hard all summer to try to get his body right.
Yeah.
Obviously, the toll of playing as many years as he has in the NBA, playing all out, hustle the way he is, has made him, you know, kind of much less physical than he used to be. Do you think Joe has a chance to get back in the league?
I believe he does. I mean, you know, you look at him physically, he's ready. If any of you guys out there saw him on Instagram or on any social media sites, he looked great. And, you know, I think with his veteran leadership, he can at least give you 12, 15 minutes a game. You know, maybe not what he used to be, but – you know, like say for instance tonight, if he were here with the Bulls, you think Joakim wouldn't have taken a hard foul on somebody?
I think he probably would have, but
he would have taken more than one.
Yeah.
But he needs to be on a good team, a team that understands what's going on in terms of team basketball.
Well, you'll see as the season gets later that a good team, like you're talking about, whether it be Boston, Houston,
Toronto,
that suffers a couple injuries to a big, will reach out and be like, hey, we could use some help. But now the question to him is, we're sitting here talking about, I'm surprised no team has really put out an offer. What we don't know is there may be an offer on the table that he's not willing to accept.
Sure.
And I guarantee you that there's probably one or two teams that are intrigued by, as Kendall talked about, because when you watch his Instagram and stuff on Twitter and his workouts, he looks great.
He does. He looks fabulous.
His form looks good. I'm not talking about his shooting form.
No, we understand.
His ability to run up and down the floor, right. His lateral movement. But he may have something in his head from a number-wise, okay, I really want to play, but I'm not playing for veterans minimum.
Right.
I'll go with a veterans exception, something like that. So, you know, the view is there's no teams that are interested. I actually think there are, but there's got to be probably a happy medium. And eventually, as attrition happens and teams and guys start to get hurt, and they need somebody with veteran experience, I wouldn't be surprised to see him in. But here's the problem: where is his motivation internally to continue to work out and keep yourself in shape as every week goes by?
Sure.
That you're not with the team. That is the hard part.
That is the hard part, yeah.
What you think is being in shape and what you think is working hard compared to what, you know, teams are doing and all this other stuff within a team atmosphere is really hard to replicate from an individual standpoint. And you ask yourself before a team signs him, if they say, hey, do you mind coming and working out for us? Does he go yes or no? Or does he stand on his laurels and be like, hey, you guys know what I can do. If you don't want me to play for you, then
well, I remember Ray Allen was flirting with a comeback for like 3 years.
Right, yeah.
But he never found the right combination of money and the right team and probably an assurance of minutes that he'd get to play.
Right.
And he never pulled the trigger on it.
He never pulled the trigger. And it's hard because we all have egos and we all think that, listen, you like as you just said, Will, you know what I can do. So I shouldn't have to come in there and do that. And a lot of players feel disrespected in that regard.
Yeah, I understand.
You know, but, you know, if you're confident in your abilities, you should just go ahead and go in and work out, you know, and then let them and then you guys come to a happy medium. I think that Joakim, because he loves the game so much, because he loves to compete so much, eventually he'll get to that point.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like all that long ago that Joakim Noah was wowing the crowd at the United Center. He was first team, all NBA,
all defense.
I mean, really, really impressive stuff. So we wish Joe well. Hopefully he gets another crack to play in the NBA. You're listening to the Bulls Talk Podcast, presented by Coors Light, Mark Schanowski, Kendall Gill, Will Perdue with you. Before we wrap it up, I want to ask you what's going on in Cleveland. Ty Lue gets the gate after six games. And, you know, they said, well, the GM, Kobe Altman, says, well, maybe he's not the right guy for this particular group. He says, we want to compete this year. Well, what does Ty Lue want to do? He's been to the finals three straight years.
Exactly.
You know, it's kind of a mishmash of a roster. You got some veterans who are on the downside.
Mm-hmm.
You got some guys in the middle like Jordan Clarkson that you don't know, or George Hill. You don't really know if they're great players. And then he's got a bunch of kids. That's a tough way to win. And for him to get fired after six games, to me, I thought was a little bit
It was
unfair.
Too short.
Yeah.
Then also you have to take into account Kevin Love may be out 4 to 6 weeks because of a toe injury.
Yeah.
You know, and now if you have your best player out, what is Ty Lue supposed to do in that scenario? I mean, you got to give him more than six games to determine his future.
And Larry Drew says, I'm not the interim coach. We're going to have to negotiate that. He says, this mess, I don't want that on my record.
Yeah, but it also, what message does it send to the players?
Yeah.
About you're actually only giving this guy that won a championship for this organization in this city six games, and you're talking about, hey, and you hear general managers, you hear, you know, front office talking about how, you know, you got to learn how to deal with adversity, and okay, they're dealing with adversity, so what's the first thing they do?
Fire the coach.
Blame game. Let's fire that guy. Talk about he's not the right coach for this group. You're like, hold on a second. What is evident, in my opinion, from the reaction of Larry Drew saying there may not be a right guy for this group, because Larry Drew's like, whoa, you're not slapping this on me. Before I officially take the the head coaching job for the rest of the year, we're going to talk contract.
Right.
Yeah.
Because what prevents you from doing the same thing to me?
Sure.
If we don't get that, if we don't change something without our best player.
Right.
Well, at least he made it through six games. Earl Watson only made it three with Phoenix last year before they showed in the gate. This year they fired the general manager just before opening day.
Yeah. But you know, that Phoenix interesting is thing is that tells you that they had this inkling before the season even started.
They knew it wasn't going
to
work.
So why even wait for the season to start?
Yeah, I mean, as soon as LeBron left, they knew Ty Lue wasn't the guy for them.
Yeah, and you've got guys like Kyle Korver and J.R. Smith who've had, you know, especially in the case of Korver, who've been contributed players on good teams. Mm-hmm. J.R. Smith has always been kind of a wild card, but you know, these guys now aren't going to play.
Right.
There's not really a trade market. So, you know, you get a situation where you got a veteran player that is going to tell them go sit down and watch the young kids lose.
Yep. That's exactly what's going to happen. And as I can tell you from experience, that's the worst place to be as a veteran. Mm-hmm. When they choose a direction and you see young kids that you can outplay and they're out there losing and you're sitting on a bench. So they're in for a rough 6 months.
You know, the interesting thing is, I was in that same exact situation in San Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
David Robinson, Chuck Person, Sean Elliott, back when Charles Smith could still play.
Mm-hmm. Which Charles Smith are we talking about? The big Charles Smith?
Yes.
You know, tall, lanky forward.
The four layup missing.
Bulls fans remember Charles Smith in Madison Square Garden. Yeah.
All these guys
blocked
are
by
hurt.
Pippen. Blocked by Pippen.
We're running with CBA guys. We got to the point where the organization was like, listen, we're not bringing in any more CBA guys.
Right.
But then what happened was is they fired Bob Hill and they brought in Greg Popovich. And he somehow was able to reel in a bunch of veteran players and some young guys and actually make it interesting, exciting, not necessarily fun because we were still getting beat. I think we had 20 wins that year. But at least he did a nice job of getting guys to engage.
Yeah.
You said you went through that situation. Mm-hmm. Did you have a situation where the coach at the moment was getting guys engaged or he had just totally lost?
Yeah, he was there in Chicago.
Chicago with Scott Skiles, yeah. And they decided to go with Kirk Heinrich and Jamal Crawford and all the young guys. Hell, even guys from the CBA were playing before I was.
And Pip was on that team,
and
too.
Was that the year that Scott Skiles just said, okay,
I quit?
No, that wasn't me. But you know, Pip was on the bench with me, and we were sitting over there eating popcorn most of the time because we knew the direction that the franchise had taken.
And then Kendall went to Milwaukee, where all careers go to die Milwaukee. For his last year. You left that. You didn't finish that year, did you?
No, I finished that year, but also the situation with Joakim happened to me as well. So. After Milwaukee released me, San Antonio called me.
Yeah.
And they said, listen, Kendall, come down to San Antonio. We'll sign you unguaranteed, which I did not want. So my ego said, no, I'm not going to sign a guarantee. But R.C. Buford continued to call me for 3 or 4 days in a row, and I continued to say no.
They win the title.
They win a damn title. So Mark, I actually really could have four rings like Will because I turned down the LA Lakers and then I turned down the San Antonio Spurs.
Another story of Kendall Gill's brushes with greatness is a good way to bring this one to a close. Thanks for listening to the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. You can find all of our shows at NBCSportsChicago.com/podcast. You can also listen and subscribe at Apple, Google Play, and Stitcher. Remember, three more home games this week. We will be here for Bulls pregame live at 6:30 from the United Center Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday. Should be an interesting week ahead, and we'll be talking about it on the pre- and post-game show. So we'll talk to you again real soon.